A bizarre lawsuit is filed against an aviation columnist. A battle within NAFI may come to a head this Friday. And airline employment sees its biggest drop in 2 years. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, October 22, 2008. Just how touchy and politically correct has our world become? A New York Times columnist is facing an international lawsuit which claims he has, in the words of a plaintiff's attorney, quote, offended Brazilians indiscriminately, unquote. According to press releases issued by an organization claiming to represent the victims of a tragic Brazilian airliner crash, New York Times aviation columnist Joe Sharkey is being sued for his reporting on a mid-air collision in which he had an unusual and intimate view from his seat in the Embraer Legacy 600, which collided with a Gol Airlines 737. The smaller bizjet made a safe emergency landing. The 737 crashed in a jungle, killing all 154 people on board. If you recall, this was the incident that resulted in a frenzy of politics and finger-pointing, in which the two U.S. pilots who were ferrying the new Embraer back to the U.S. were charged criminally, and Brazilian military air traffic controllers, who were recorded on tape approving the potential collision course, played run and hide from their role in the disaster. The lawsuit has been brought against Sharkey by Roseanne Guchar, the widow of one of the Gol Flight 1907 crash victims, quote, seeking compensation for moral damages, unquote. It charges Sharkey with blog entries encouraging the two U.S. pilots to fight extradition to face the criminal charges in Brazil, quote, launching personal attacks against Brazil's president, air traffic controllers, and other notorious individuals, and repeatedly and piercingly started offending Brazilians indiscriminately, unquote. The widow also says Sharkey used language which was, quote, offensive against all victims' families and Brazilians, unquote. There's no monetary award being specifically sought, only a reference to an amount comparable to what a similar suit would bring in the U.S. to, quote, effectively prevent this type of behavior, unquote. The attorneys say an apology from Sharkey in the same media used for his original comments would suffice as an alternative to, quote, restore the widow's dignity, unquote. I'm not sure if this is related, but Joe Sharkey has changed the title of his blog from Joe Sharkey at Large to High Anxiety. ANN has been in touch, and we hope to bring you comments from Joe and from the New York Times shortly. The National Association of Flight Instructors started out as an independent organization in 1967 and has now been part of EAA for years. NAFI's stated mission is to serve the full spectrum of the flight instructor community, but a battle appears to be brewing over charges that elitism and internal politics are threatening its programs. ANN has received a copy of an email alert sent to members of the NAFI community alleging, quote, I have been advised that an attempt will be made during the upcoming NAFI board meeting to remove Sandy and Joanne Hill from the association's board of directors, while also taking the master instructor program from them and relocating it in Oshkosh, unquote. You can read more about the charges that are flying in the text version of this story on our website, but the political conflict has apparently reached the point at which some of the group's master CFIs have threatened to resign from NAFI, forfeiting the credentials which exempt them from the FAA's biennial recurrent training requirements. Part of the reason for the intrigue is the structure of NAFI's board of directors. The bylaws provide for new directors to be elected not by NAFI members, but by a vote of the other directors, with the subsequent approval required from the board of EAA. One previous FAA Flight Instructor of the Year has reportedly called for the immediate resignation of the current board of NAFI and a change in the bylaws to provide for votes by members to approve new directors. Whatever happens on Friday, we'll do our best to unravel it for you. For the latest updates, follow the story at aero-news.net. No surprise here, U.S. scheduled passenger airlines employed 2.1% fewer workers in August 2008 than in August 2007. The decline continues a trend which began the previous month and is expected to continue as airlines follow through with announced plans to cut capacity. The August numbers also represent the largest year-to-year decrease since October of 2006. Those numbers come from the USDOT's Bureau of Transportation Statistics, which issued its monthly report yesterday. All network airlines except Alaska decreased employment year-to-year. You can get more details at aero-news.net. If an airline imposes a fuel surcharge above and beyond the normal fare to compensate for record fuel prices, it's hard to argue with that. The assumption, of course, would be that if jet fuel prices fall nearly in half, the surcharge would be reduced or eliminated. Well, if the airlines keep collecting those fees after fuel costs fall nearly in half over a six-month period and make excuses for keeping them in place, is it really fair to call them fuel surcharges? That's the point U.S. Senator Robert Menendez, New Jersey's Democrat junior senator, is making to 11 U.S. airlines. Newsday reports Menendez has sent letters calling on the airlines to discontinue the fees, which were blamed on fuel costs when imposed. He notes the price paid by airlines for jet fuel averaged $2.34 a gallon last week. That's down 45% from the average of $4.33 back in July. Quote, "It's deceptive to say you still need a fuel surcharge when aviation fuel prices are down $2 per gallon. It's just wrong," unquote. But it may be tough to get the airlines to let go. Industry rhetoric seems to suggest that rising fuel prices were simply another opportunity to add a revenue line to the budget and not directly linked to fuel costs. David Castlevetter, a spokesman for the American Transport Association, an airline trade group, told Newsday the decision on removing surcharges will be made not in response to actual fuel prices, but rather by market forces. Quote, "The U.S. airline industry continues to operate with uncertainty. We're going to lose several billion dollars this year," unquote. Gerard Arpey, CEO of American Airlines parent company AMR, observed last week that it would be, quote, "short-sighted to conclude that fuel prices, which remain volatile, are no longer a challenge," unquote. AMR VP Beverly Goulet recently bragged to stock analysts that fees, including those levied for fuel and checked bags, are bringing in, quote, "several hundred millions of dollars," unquote, for her company. All this raises the question, if the fuel surcharges are staying put because passengers seem to pay them without complaint, why didn't airlines just raise the base fares and skip all the hidden charges? Up next on ANN, a U.S. Navy pilot is reprimanded for flying a surveillance and targeting plane over a Venezuelan military base. The Osprey celebrates a year in Iraq, and the NTSB wants more placards and procedures. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. As if diplomatic relations between the U.S. and Venezuela weren't rocky enough already, a veteran naval pilot and air wing commander flew a U.S. Navy S-3B Viking into Venezuelan airspace this past May 17th, setting off a diplomatic firestorm. The Navy Times reports Captain James Paulson, commander of Carrier Air Wing 1, received his wings in 1985 and has logged more than 4,600 hours. His S-3B was operating under Joint Interagency Task Force South on what was claimed to be a counter-narcotics mission in international airspace. The U.S. admits that Paulson overflew a Caribbean island called La Orquilla, where there just happens to be a Venezuelan military base, then contacted Venezuelan controllers to inform them he was returning immediately to international airspace. The S-3B is a surveillance and precision targeting aircraft. If you were Venezuela and being threatened by the U.S. with blacklisting as a state sponsor of terrorism, what would you do? Well, the U.S. ambassador to Venezuela was called on the carpet to explain the overflight. On the U.S. side, A JAG investigation is said to be ongoing. The Times reports that on Friday, Captain Paulson was issued a punitive letter of reprimand from Fleet Forces Command Chief Admiral Jonathan Greenert, and that further action may be pending, according to the Navy. But Paulson remains in command of Carrier Air Wing 1, which is based at Naval Air Station Oceana, Virginia. Sea Control Squadron 32 in Jacksonville, Florida, where the S-3B Viking involved in the incident was based at the time, stood down earlier this month. It's hard to recall an aircraft which was more criticized during its development than the V-22 Osprey. But after a year of deployment in Iraq without a major incident, the pilots who fly the tiltrotor hybrid are giving it great reviews. The Associated Press reports the Osprey has won over the Marine pilots who first flew it into a war zone. Despite critics who said it lacked adequate armor and firepower, descends too slowly, is less maneuverable than a helicopter, can't auto-rotate if the engines fail, and kicks up too much dust. But pilots say they appreciate the Osprey's speed advantage over the helicopters it's displacing, like the CH-46 Sea Knight. One says he can take the plane to altitudes beyond the reach of small arms fire, quote, like a bat out of hell, unquote. Military officials admit that direct comparisons to older helicopters can't be made yet, in part because modern-day political considerations have altered our military tactics. Major Paul Kopax led two Ospreys on a recent mission to Fallujah and comments, quote, we have not been battle-tested because we aren't going guns blazing into hot zones. Our nation is now too sensitive to the loss of soldiers to let that happen, unquote. To be fair, skeptics still remember problems that beset the V-22 during its development, including a series of technical failures and deadly crashes. Two of those accidents came in quick succession in 2000, killing a total of 23 Marines and nearly ending the Osprey's development. Military officials admit a few technical glitches in the field, many involving avionics or contamination of sensitive parts by the ubiquitous dust in the Iraq theater. But they also consider the aircraft safe enough to have used it to transport Barack Obama around Iraq on his tour earlier this year. The National Transportation Safety Board issued two new recommendations on Monday, aimed at improving passenger awareness of how to properly deploy the emergency life rafts commonly seen on the exteriors of turbine-powered helicopters operating offshore. The board cites the crash last December of an Air Logistics Bell 206L1 helicopter, which hit the water while approaching an offshore platform in the Gulf of Mexico, with a commercial pilot and three passengers aboard. All four survived the crash, but one passenger died while awaiting rescue. NTSB attributes that death to the pilot's failure to properly brief passengers on how to deploy the life raft, after one survivor said he mistook an instruction to pull the red T-handle as a call to inflate his own PFD. Both passengers said they didn't even know the aircraft was equipped with a life raft. The board wants the FAA to require placards for each external T-handle to identify their locations and provide instructions, and pilot pre-flight safety briefings to passengers informing them of the location and activation of all flotation equipment on turbine helicopters. An NTSB administrative law judge, William Pope, has reversed the FAA's revocation of an air carrier certificate held by AirTrek Incorporated, an air ambulance operator based in Punta Gorda, Florida. AirTrek had operated for 30 years without a violation when, in May of this year, the FAA issued an emergency order suspending the company's certificate until it could demonstrate compliance with regulations regarding the reporting of mechanical irregularities and calculation of weight and balance. In June, the FAA escalated its action to an emergency revocation. In the end, Judge Pope ruled that only two violations were valid, both of them by individual pilots, not directed, caused, or permitted by management, and limited to the firm's Winchester, Virginia location, which at the time of the revocation order had already been closed a year and a half. AirTrek was represented by attorney Gregory Winton of Aviation Law Experts, LLC, and Daryl Carr of the Farr Law Firm in Punta Gorda, Florida. Winton says AirTrek will apply for reimbursement of its attorney's fees and expenses pursuant to the Equal Access to Justice Act. Still ahead, the first Hawker 4000 customer has his plane seized by the feds. An author has some fun at the TSA's expense. And is it possible Aspen is already celebrating the sale of its 1,000th Evolution display? You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, October 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. Everyone at Hawker Beechcraft celebrated when the company finally delivered its first composite-bodied Hawker 4000 business jet. But the aircraft, which provided those employees with a lift in morale after years of delays in development, has now been impounded by the feds, along with other property of accused tax dodger Gary Hall. The Wichita Eagle reports Hall is a tobacco wholesaler in Kansas who, along with seven co-defendants, faces a 43-count indictment on charges of plotting to avoid paying $25 million in cigarette taxes to Oklahoma and several Indian tribes. The Eagle reports the investigation started in 2006 when the Kansas Highway Patrol stopped a vehicle and discovered numerous packages of cigarettes from Oklahoma worth over $200,000 without required documentation and tax stamps. Hall and his associates are charged with stamping cigarettes for sale at the lower tax rates Indian tribes receive, then selling those discounted packs at off-reservation areas. Hall's attorney, Dan Monnett, denies his client benefited from the scheme. Jim Cross, a spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Kansas, says of Hall's Hawker, quote, "If he's acquitted, he'll get his plane back," unquote. The Transportation Security Administration tests its own security screeners periodically by sending investigators to attempt to sneak contraband past checkpoints for the stated purpose of finding and patching vulnerabilities. But author Jeffrey Goldberg conducts similar tests just to prove his assertion that the TSA, quote, "represents an egregious waste of tax dollars," unquote. The Minneapolis Star-Tribune found Goldberg's article in the November issue of Atlantic Magazine a matter of local interest because the author says he talked his way through security at Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport using a fake first-class boarding pass for a Northwest flight to Washington, no photo ID, and did it while wearing an Osama bin Laden T-shirt under his coat. He adds that he was wearing that long coat on a hot day, had splashed water on his face to simulate sweat, and had earlier torn up a bunch of other fake boarding passes conspicuously in an airport men's room just to see if anyone would report his suspicious behavior. Quote, "no one piped up," unquote. TSA spokesman Ellen Howe calls Goldberg's article, quote, "more of an entertainment piece than a treatment of security. It's absurd to think that we take things from people because of what they wear," unquote. Goldberg says he finally approached the Minneapolis checkpoint with his bogus boarding pass and told security that he'd lost his ID but still hoped to board. He says that after looking over a credit card, health insurance card, and a library card, he was allowed through with the ironic parting advice, quote, "let this be a lesson for you," unquote. Well, yeah, apparently the lesson is that a smooth talker can get past the TSA. And it's not the first time. Goldberg claims he's boarded flights with pocket knives, matches from hotels in Beirut, dust masks, nail clippers, box cutters, and an inflatable Yasser Arafat doll. You know, it doesn't seem that long ago we were reporting the debut of Aspen Avionics Evolution Series glass panel retrofits. Now it's already time to report the sale of the company's 1,000th Evolution flight display system. In honor of the occasion, Aspen will award an EFD-1000 pilot primary flight display during AOPA Expo in San Jose on Saturday, November 8th. Registered Expo attendees will be given one ticket each to be entered by dropping it into the spinning bin located at Aspen's booth number 1438. The company is calling its contest the Grand Glass Giveaway. The winner will be responsible for the cost of installation into an aircraft, but need not be present to win and will have the option to upgrade the prize at extra cost. And finally, just when all the late-night talk show hosts were running out of drunk pilot jokes, a 44-year-old United Airlines pilot was arrested after he was removed from the cockpit of a Boeing 777 at London Heathrow Airport on Sunday. The Daily Telegraph reports the pilot failed a breathalyzer test at 9 in the morning. Few specifics are available, but the Telegraph reports its sources believe police were called after a member of the airport's ground staff suspected the pilot of imbibing before departing on the long transatlantic flight to San Francisco. A spokesman for London's Metropolitan Police said, quote, the man arrested is bailed to return to the Heathrow police station on January 16, pending further inquiries, unquote. The airline isn't messing around. Quote, United's alcohol policy is among the strictest in the industry, and we have no tolerance for abuse or violation of this well-established policy. Safety is our number one priority, and the pilot has been removed from service while we are cooperating with authorities and conducting a full investigation, unquote. You know, The Tonight Show last night was a rerun and featured a skit in which a chimpanzee in an airline captain's uniform was cast in the role of a drunk pilot. I'm guessing that now we're in for more of that kind of humor. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. With more than 85 planes to choose from, you knew this had to happen. A professional service to evaluate which light sport aircraft is best for you and your application. I'll talk with Rick Roiland of Downing Aviation Associates. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCast. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.